The next case for argument this morning is number 2014-1823, Shadow Art Productions versus the Tax Commissioner. Ms. Komek, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. Two preface notes with regard to our position this morning. The first is, I do not believe there are any factual disputes in the record. The exhibits were stipulated during the BTA hearing. Second kind of preface note, I think that I'd be hard-pressed, and if not unwise, to suggest that there's not an entire body of case law that discusses the exemption issue that we're here today until a point, right? And so there's a whole body of case law about the owner and about the owner's use of property. And we're here on the very singular issue, as a preliminary kind of dispositive thing, on first impression. And I think the way to begin that, and how I'd like to begin that in my with my time, is to direct you to something, Exhibit 81 from the BTA transcript. This is the affidavit that was submitted and stipulated. It's the affidavit of Fred Previtz. Fred is the Ohio State Archivist, and he is the legal custodian of the records on the legislative hearings that took place for House Bill 160 during 2008, and that is the piece of legislation that we are relying on for a change of law, such that all that other case law, we do not believe any longer applies within the given parameters.
Counsel, I guess as an initial matter, do we even get to the legislative history if the statutory language is clear?
So, correct. We don't.
Statutory construction. Where is the ambiguity?
That's right. Statutory construction 101. We believe that the language is clear, right? That that 5709. I'm sorry, 5712.27 was amended to allow our client, as a party to an exemption application, to file for a tax exemption for real property. Yes. So that in itself is clear. The question is, how is that being construed in the context of the statutory framework? And why is there a disconnect between the clear language that they can file versus they can have the benefit of a filing? Right. So
you're suggesting that the language in 5715.27 is clear and we're all in agreement that Shadow Art can file the application under that, but that the legislative change to that section renders ambiguous?
No, it explains the purpose for that change, is how I would phrase it. It explains why the legislature made several changes to allow, right, and expand the parties, the class of folks who could make an application.
Right. I'm still stuck. But if we agree that the language is clear in 27, why do we get to the legislative history at all?
I'm using it to bolster my opinion because I believe that the tax commissioner is misconstruing that section specifically for how it was intended to be applied.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm saying to you that I believe that it is clear. And I believe that any other construction of that section to deprive a person, a party, who makes an application of the end benefit because of that prior historic case law renders this change completely meaningless. Completely meaningless. The law should mean what it says, right? And so that's an overly broad statement. But what it's intended to do, right, and it says it right here, the notes from the Judiciary Committee where this provision was evaluated says, it's on page 29 of the packet in Exhibit 81, Revised Code 5715.27 provides that the owner of any property may file an application for exemption from taxation with the tax commissioner. In response to other cases from this very court, in 2004, the Supreme Court held that the term owner referred only to the legal title holder of real property. It dismissed a case involving an application filed by a long-term lessee of property because the lessee lacked standing to file the application. They cite Performing Arts of Metro Toledo. Also in 2005, the Supreme Court vacated decisions of the Tax Commissioner and the BTA, where the applicant was a community college but had failed to designate themselves as a trustee. Those are points of standing. So the purpose of this legislation was to allow other parties to expand who could file for the exemption. The next step is you can file for it, but you can't have it, right? Am I presuming? I'm looking at you and I'm saying that's the next assumption. So why am I referring to this? Because that's what they intended to effectuate. And in a perhaps overly simplistic manner, I mean, is it possible the legislature used less words, right? They did. They made a change that is clear and simple. And that is the provision that provides standing. So, yes.
I guess... Okay, so if Shadow Art can now file an application under this provision, couldn't it still get a benefit if an exemption is granted, even though it's the lessee, but the exemption could turn on a different standard, such as that articulated under 5709.12 or 121?
That is correct. So the purpose of how I'm following here is we've hit the hurdle at the owner point, right? Mm-hmm. The decision of the tax commissioner and the decision of the BTA are based on the presumption that I only have procedural or mechanical standing, right? Mm-hmm. Standing, which that completely obliterates the legal premise of standing, right? Any interest in the outcome and those kind of case law, principles of law. So we get hung up on the owner provision. I agree. The 5709.12 section B standard, the general exemption for institutions, right, who are using property in a charitable manner. So the fact of the matter is Shadow Art can receive the benefit of the exemption filing that they have made based on the new law. The tax commissioner disagrees and says that the exemption is based on the owner, not the party who files, and in this case, a lessee for an initial term of not less than 30 years.
If we were setting aside the application filing language in 5715.27 and just looking at 1.2 and 1.2.1,
yes.
Do you think Shadow Art qualifies just reading those two provisions?
Yes, and I think the record demonstrates as much. And I think that the tax commissioner erred in its final determination with its cursory statement at the end that we do not believe they're a charitable institution anyhow. Right, so it's kind of an interesting point that you make because I did think that we'd spend a lot of time on the owner component. But in terms of the 5709.12b standard, the institution that filed the application, being Shadow Art, already being a lessee for a term of not less than 30 years. The analysis then becomes what is the use of the property? And the record demonstrates a number of criteria upon which, had we gotten past the owner issue, that either the tax commissioner or the BTA could have determined. Not only is Shadow Art Productions a community arts organization under Ohio law, which is a combination of the statutory allowance, but also the case law that has developed for community arts organizations within those broad parameters of case law. So Shadow Art is a 501c3, which I understand is not the end-all, be-all under our case law, but it is a threshold, right? So they are a charitable organization committed to arts, and the record is replete with their charitable art, and so performing arts and the creation of arts and the education of arts, and that is their mission. They're on par with other organizations, as we sit here in Columbus, whose activities are deemed charitable and whose property is exempt. So the examples would be the Columbus Museum of Art, the Lincoln Theater that sits on the east side here of town, the Kappa offices and the Ohio Theater. So Shadow Art Productions is on par with those. And if you are able to review that record, Shadow Art has collaborated with all of these institutions to produce original art, original music, original forms of dance and drama and music that qualifies all of those institutions.
under those provisions, however, as interpreted by this court, don't we need to be looking at the owner's activity?
So now we're back around to the owner. Mm-hmm. And allowing, construing the original, construing the change in the law to apply to the owner without regard to who the lessee completely negates the purpose of that change in the law from 2008.
Couldn't that change in the law have impact with respect to other statutory provisions, though, as I believe the commissioner has argued in their brief?
So I would ask you to clarify, are you saying that, well, is there a precedent set by virtue of this change that impacts other applicants in other code sections?
I guess I'm saying that the application requirements, the filing requirements set forth in 5715.27 are not specifically limited to this charitable exemption under 5709.12 or 121, right? They apply across the board. Okay, so it wouldn't necessarily be rendered meaningless just because it doesn't have impact on 5709.12 or 121, right?
So, yes, it would be completely meaningless. And here's why. Because saying that you are providing the right, there's two ways to look at it. Go ahead.
It might be meaningless. I mean, under your construction, it might be meaningless as to those two sections.
Right.
But that wouldn't necessarily render the entire amendment, the entire statutory change, meaningless if it had significance with respect to other applicants,
so,
correct?
Yes, and let me say that in this way, that reading the change in the law differently is, there's zero effect, it nets out. So if you're going to use a different code section and we're still evaluating the owner, then what is the purpose, right? The idea, and we talk about it a little bit in the brief, is so you had a charitable owner and now you have a charitable lessee, and so now that charitable lessee can make the application, but you're still reverting to the owner's activity. That could occur without the change in the law. So you're right, it's not rendered meaningless, it's just useless, right? It's just of no different force or effect when a very specific change in the law was made for a very specific purpose, right? And the interpretation that they're suggesting is, well, now someone else can file the paperwork, right? You still have to have a charitable owner of property. And that is not the purpose of the amendment as set forth, because the Metro Toledo case was a for-profit owner with a charitable lessee. Right? There's another case, there's a BTA case from 2001, Thurston Woods. Two significant points for that case. One, they determined that limited partnerships were institutions under the general definition that we had been using for institutions and how they were defined, finding that there was no real discernible or relevant difference between a limited partnership and a corporation so as to qualify as an institution, right, that would make an application for real property. The other part is that case did the same thing that Justice Stratton did in her dissent in Metro Toledo, and then in a few other dissents, you know, about encouraging the legislature to look at the definition of owner, right? They did. That was the exact call to action from her dissent, understood as a dissent, but that was the call to action, and that was the response. A very simple change that said you can file because you have standing, because standing is a legal concept. It's an interest. It's an interest in the outcome of a case, right? It's the right to have a court hear your case. That's standing. And so the principle being advanced by the tax commissioner that that's just a change and so you can file paperwork, that's akin to agency or something or power of attorney rather than legal standing to benefit from the outcome of this case.
To be fair, I'm not sure that standing to file an application is necessarily a concept that equates with standing to bring having a case or controversy in a court.
Yes. So I would question that. I would ask you to question that, because what does it mean? I'll reserve the balance of my time for any rebuttal, but I want to answer your question, which is, how can it not be? How can we have something called procedural standing where you can, and by the way, they didn't use words like procedural standing. They didn't use words that said, you are an agent, you are a designee, you are an authorized representative. They said you're a lessee for a term of not less than 30 years. They also added beneficial owners for a trust. These are indicia of ownership. The purpose of this change, albeit so simple that it's clear, right? They used simple words, less than we all use, right? Lawyers are paid by the word. They used a simple way to fix a simple problem. And the tax commissioner is simply not construing it in that way. So that's why I say that it is clear, but that they're not construing it in the manner in which it was intended. So the concept of procedural standing doesn't exist for purposes of applications. We call those authorized representatives or designations or attorneys or something. But standing, it completely negates the concept of standing. And I've stood in this courtroom 6 years ago and heard arguments related to the importance of standing and that we don't convey standing by mere contract, that there must be an interest presented. So what is the consequence of considering something called procedural standing versus substantive standing, right? It's a convenience for them to try and delineate this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nehra?
Master Commissioner Long, may it please the court. My name is Raina Nara, and I'm here on behalf of the tax commissioner. This court should affirm the decisions of the tax commissioner and the BTA for two reasons. To first answer the question that you posed to my colleague, Shadow Art has not met the statutory exemption requirements under the statute to comport with this court's standard of review, the strict construction standard of review. And secondly, Shadow Art's read of the application provision here is completely unavailing to its claim. So as to the first point here, the owner of the property, 503 South Front Street, is a for-profit business leasing the Front Street property here to Shadow Art under a for-profit lease. And Shadow Art sought exemption for the property here under 5709.12 and .121. But those provisions both require the property owner to use the property exclusively for charitable purposes and also to be a charitable institution. But here, there's nothing about the owner or the owner's use of the property that are charitable. So the long-held requirements for exemption have simply not been met in this case.
So I guess that sort of brings us right into Shadow Art's argument that as a long-term lessee, they are an owner within the meaning of these provisions.
Yes, and you know, I think their position is really based on the fact that they know they haven't met those requirements under the substantive provisions, and so they're improperly pointing this court to the application provision. But that argument is a complete red herring, because as you had stated earlier, that provision only allows the lessee in this case to file an application, but not to obtain exemption. And the plain language of the statute is clear on that. So first of all, to begin with the ownership thresholds under .12 and .121, Shadow Art's case here is immediately fatal under .12. And first of all, that provision requires the property owner to use the property exclusively for charitable purposes, as you know, Your Honor. And in this case, there are two uses of the property happening simultaneously. You have the owner's use, who is operating it under a lease, and then you have Shadow Art's use as a lessee. As counsel here has ignored, the use that's determinative under 1.2 and 1.2.1, as this court stated in Northeast Ohio Psychiatric Institute, the use that is determinative is the owner's use. And that is the most important element of this case. The owner's use is what matters. And in Ohio, leasing property with a view to profit is not an exempt use. And that's what the owner here is doing. There's a for-profit lease. The owner is leasing it for profit. And so the requirements under 1.2 have not been met. If we look at 1.2.1, that provision requires the owner to be charitable or educational. And in a lease situation, both the owner and the lessee have to both be charitable entities. In this case, it's not true. It's not the case. Shadow Art, the owner in this case, 503 South Front Street Limited Partnership is a for-profit entity, and appellants have even conceded that the owner has no charitable purpose, and that was conceded in the stipulations in this case. An institution is only charitable under 121 if its core activities qualify under the charity standards for determining charitable use. This court talked about that in the dialysis clinic case, and that standard is you must provide a service on a nonprofit basis to those in need without regard for their ability to pay, their race, or their creed. So here, as we said, the owner is not charitable. They're not providing any nonprofit services. Their core activity is leasing the property, and it's being leased for a view to profit under a for-profit lease. So there's no way that the appellants in this case can justify exemption under 1-2 and 1-2-1. The for-profit lease in this case is, there's nothing charitable about it. It's an arm's length lease. It was, when you look at the record, it's a 45-page agreement that bears all the traditional hallmarks of a commercial lease. There's a yearly base rent that is charged, and then monthly installments that are required to be paid by the lessee. Shadow Art has to pay an increasing amount of rent every year. And in fact, in 2011, they paid $142,500. In 2012, they paid $342,000 of rent. By year 29 and 30, they're going to have to pay over $1 million of base rental. So, you know, it's clear that the intent of this lease was to make a profit. And Shadow Art's own witness in this case, Steve Geyer, who's the executive director and co-founder of Shadow Art, he confirmed that the lease was negotiated at arm's length during the hearing in this case. And so the parties knew, entering into the lease agreement, that property tax would be owed, and Shadow Art was going to be responsible for paying its proportionate amount of the tax. So,
counsel, I think basically the parties are in agreement that 501 or 503 South Front Street's interests here are not charitable, at least in terms of this lease. So, I mean, really, I guess we get back to sort of the legislative argument that's been raised, and and 5715.27. What's the commissioner's position on what that amendment accomplishes, what effect it does have, and whether or not it somehow indicates an intent to change the meaning of ownership as this court has interpreted it in the past?
Your Honor, the tax commissioner is not misconstruing the application statute. The application statute, the plain language of the statute is clear, and I think you have mentioned that earlier to my colleague. And I think, you know, the provision is a universal exemption application statute. So it applies across the board to several exemptions, exemption provisions, and it governs all those applications for exemption. It does not govern who can obtain exemption. That's the plain language of the statute, and the amendment to that statute says that, first of all, an owner can make the application, can apply. The amendment that was made only added or only expanded the class of persons that can apply. One of those class of persons is a 30-year lessee, which has allowed Shadow Art to apply for exemption in this case.
And I guess, what do you make of the argument that that gives Shadow Art procedural standing and they must be entitled to some right or some...
Well, the commissioner hasn't disputed that Shadow Art has standing to file the application, as we know. But, you know, we're bound by the plain language of the statute. We cannot move beyond it and construe the language that says apply, construe that to mean obtain exemption. The thing about Shadow Art's read of the statute in this case is that it produces absurd results. It's impossibly overbroad. The way that Shadow Art reads it is that any 30-year lessee can obtain exemption without having to satisfy .12 and .121. And so it completely renders them meaningless and inconsequential. And really, it forces you to read the application provision in a manner that violates point 1.2 and point 1.2.1. So we don't think it makes sense. And, you know, this court looks at statutory provisions under the rules of statutory construction, which say that if the plain language of the statute is clear, there's no ambiguity in that plain language, then there's no reason to really make an interpretation. The plain language is clear. And as far as Shadow Art's contention that it renders, you know, the application process worthless if they can't obtain exemption, you know, they could have been granted. They could have, the property could have obtained exemption if they had satisfied point 1.2 and point 1.2.1. You know, it's only in this case, I think, only because Shadow Art hasn't met those requirements that they are making the argument that it's rendered worthless. If the owner had been charitable in this case, we wouldn't be standing here today. And again, it's a universal provision, you know, that impacts other sections of the statute, 5709.08, 5709.081, 0.084. You know, certain property is rendered exempt when you have leasing situations, and sometimes even when the lessee or if the property is being operated by a for-profit entity. So in many cases, Shadow Art's the facts surrounding Shadow Art under other exemption provisions, they could render an exemption. But in this case, under 1.2 and 1.2.1, they don't. So it doesn't mean that the application provision for all other applicants is rendered meaning is worthless just because Shadow Art here hasn't obtained it. And the other argument that Shadow Art is making in their briefing is that according to them, the belonging to, the phrase belonging to in point 1.2 and 1.2.1 means something less than ownership. And their approach is to expand that to include lessees who are not actually the legal title holders of the property. And that argument has been long ago rejected by this court.
What do you make of their claim that the amendment to 5715.27 at least is good reason for us to revisit that and for the court to reconsider the meaning of belonging to?
Well, I think you know, that's certainly within this court's purview to revisit you know, any interpretation it's made in the past. But this interpretation or this principle that the court has applied has been around since 1876. The Humphreys versus Little Sisters of the Poor case, the court held that belonging to means owner. It doesn't mean something less than owner. And then all Ohio decisions since then have been uniform and consistent with that rule. You've had this court in 1944 in City of Toledo versus Jenkins. You had a situation where the city had a 20-year lease, and then their ownership would vest in the city after the expiration of that lease. But this court said that wasn't sufficient to satisfy the belonging to requirement. And then you have other cases in, for example, in the 11th District, a charitable institution held a lease interest that was renewable indefinitely for 20-year segments. So these really long-term leases where a lot of property rights are being obtained through the lease, but that still was not sufficient to satisfy belonging to. So the court seems to have a strict standard with regard to this issue. But the other thing is that Shadow Art, the way that they approach this, would erode this court's understanding of 1.2 and 1.2.1 themselves. Because this court stated in Dialysis Clinic that 5709.12 operates in situations where ownership and use of the property coincide. But this court also said that under 1.2.1, the use and the ownership need not coincide under 1.2.1 to satisfy that provision. But if Shadow Art were to read the belonging to language to say that the lessee qualifies as the owner, then that would completely erode this court's understanding of, you know, and of the purpose of 121, because it's rendering the owner and the lessee one and the same. So I think you're going to have to contradict a lot of case law by revisiting this question of law. The other thing is the General Assembly has used belonging to and other provisions that are separate and distinct from 1-2 and 1-2-1. 5709.08, 0.11, 0.111 are just a couple examples. So this is not a phrase that is not uncommon in the code. And you know, Ohio courts have never said that belonging to does not mean owner. So, Your Honor, Shadow Art really presents no meaningful basis to overrule the principle or deviate from it. Really, their only basis for doing so is to allow them to satisfy the exemption provisions, which they don't meet in this case. To conclude, the Front Street property here, again, is owned by a for-profit business. And the owner's primary use of the property is leasing it under a for-profit lease, as we stated before. Therefore, the threshold requirements for exemption have not been met under this court's strict standard of review. And secondly, Shadow Art's reliance on the application provision, as we said before, is misplaced because it only allows them to apply for exemption, does not allow them to obtain it. And third, even if this was a doubtful situation, Your Honor, even if there was some doubt as to whether they meet those standards, the standard of review requires this court to strictly construe tax exemption statutes against the party seeking exemption. And that's because exemptions are a matter of legislative grace. They're in derogation of the rights of other property owners. And, you know, Shatter Art simply has not shown that it's entitled to the exemption in this case. For these reasons, the tax commissioner asks this court to affirm the reasonable and lawful decision of the BTA and the tax commissioner. Thank you.
Ms. Komek, you've used all your time, but you may have 30 seconds.
Oh, thank you. So what I did not artfully say, but what counsel has helped me to express here, is if this court has any question about the meaning of 0.12 or 121, then that is the question about how a statute reads. That is statutory construction. How does the first provision that then works for 1-2 and 1-2-1, how are those read together? And if it says owner, and if that section has been changed to allow an expanded group of folks, right, that is the very question that we have. That is the lack of clarity in the legislature, in the legislature's change of the law. And so we can quote all the past law that we want, but the civil rights law also changed a lot of case law history as well. And that's like an overbroad example, but I mean, let's bring it down. We have a change in the law, and a change in the law means that we must consider them. And counsel has suggested that this court might question its own understanding of sections 1-2 and 1-2-1. Well, then who cares whether I understand them or not? That is a lack of clarity that this court should take up, right? Because if you read those, the law is meant for people to read and follow it, and you cannot follow it in this case.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
The case will be submitted, and the parties will be notified of the court's decision.
Thank you. All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.